The end of May was chock full of Microsoft events. Directions on Microsoft's latest in-person licensing boot camp took place in Atlanta, the very same time that Microsoft was staging its Build 2024 Developers Conference in Seattle. Who says you can't be in two places at the same time? Directions was there for both events, and we are here to give you the skinny on Build and boot camp in a single podcast. Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing Podcast. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the Editor-in-Chief here at Directions. I'm your host for the series of podcasts for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. My guest for today's episode is Directions Analyst Wes Miller, who has been co-leading Directions on Microsoft's licensing boot camps for more than 12 years. In addition to teaching as part of the boot camps, Wes analyzes and writes about Azure Infrastructure Services, including Azure Virtual Machines and Azure Active Directory, as well as Microsoft Systems Management Technologies. Hi, Wes. Thank you so much for doing our debrief special today.
Thanks for having me. It's exciting to be here.
We're going to kick things off with Wes sharing his top five insights from last week's licensing bootcamp in Atlanta. Take it away, Wes.
So my five things, you know, it really was a very common theme as we were going across the boot camp. I always love doing the boot camps in person because they're so much more interactive than we would do them online. Mm-hmm. But I think the key thing that was my takeaway from this one is that customers are under more financial pressure than Microsoft might be aware of. And in particular, I think there's a lot of pressure that, you know, Microsoft wants customers to be at Microsoft 365 E5, for example, which of course is, as you and I've talked about, you know, people talk about, well, what about E7? And you've made the point, people aren't even at E5 yet. And you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
In fact, we're seeing so many customers who are still at Office 365 who haven't actually moved up to the Microsoft 365 world. And a lot of them have very likely some license compliance problems, but they've also got budgetary constraints that they're trying to live within. So it's an interesting time because Microsoft wants to grow revenue and customers are trying to watch their bottom line. So it's concerning. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, though, I think there's an increasing interest in Azure Virtual Desktop. And I think it actually aligns with that first point because customers have been doing like on-prem VDI for so long that something like AVD holds a lot of promise, and in particular the multi-session technology that Jim has written about a couple times that gives sort of an operational efficiency. I think we're seeing more and more customers realize, oh, okay, that's a unique Azure thing I can't do anywhere else, and taking advantage of that. But the other thing that we're still seeing is a lot of confusion in terms of people still using remote desktop services and then comparing it to AVD and then not understanding where the cut line is. When should I use Windows 365 or even DevBox for my developer workstations versus AVD? So there's not really good guidance, and it's something that I think we're still trying to figure out how to help guide people to, but there's a lot of confusion because Microsoft has so many paths for server-based desktops today.
Right. I was really surprised. I'm going to talk about Build later, but mm-hmm. I thought we'd see a lot of Windows 365 content at Build, and we didn't. And I just was surprised that wasn't there.
Yeah, and I guess it is surprising. I mean, I think you'd want to see some sort of end-to-end showing off the enterprise scenarios of it. You know, maybe we'll see more at Ignite. Mm-hmm.
Chicago in November. Yes. Are you excited?
I love a good thunderstorm.
Maybe some snow, maybe some hail. We could get anything there at that point in time.
That could be great. Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. I think there's going to be a lot of product announcements as Ignite rolls around for sure.
Me too. Definitely.
To that end, I think the other thing is Azure interest seems to be on the increase. Again, bearing in mind that people are under financial pressure, we're still seeing a lot of customers who sort of got burned. They may have overspent on Azure in terms of prepayment and then walked away from money that they didn't actually use. So I think there's some sensitivity there. But what I'm seeing in exchange for it is a lot of customers sort of waking up and saying, all right, where we're going to use Azure, because a lot of them are already using AWS, where we're going to use Azure, let's really start trying to be conscious about how can we keep costs down, use things like the hybrid benefit, use things like reservations, and figure out where savings plan for compute plays in. And you're working on an interesting strategy that I think will help give customers some guidance there. But there's so many tools, it's really difficult. It's like a complex Swiss Army knife. Which one should I use where? Mm-hmm. And trying to help customers be effective with that is crazy, just because you got to understand all of Azure first, and then you have to understand all of how to discount Azure on top of that.
Plus the naming of all those different discount plans. It's just like Copilots. It's super confusing, right?
Yes, yes. Microsoft should commit to one tier of licensing term. No, I'm just kidding. commitment tier, of course, being another term for log analytics and monitor. But I digress. Sorry. On the note of branding confusion, you know, this was the second live bootcamp we've done where Copilot came up. And in San Diego, it was more of a pull. We had a lot of people just sort of, because it was so new, people were asking, what's the deal with Copilot? What's the deal with Copilot? And a lot of confusion around it, because as we've talked about, there's too many and it's hard to keep them straight. But I think in general, the one we're hearing the most about is Copilot for Microsoft 365. And it's clearly getting pitched intensely by Microsoft. But what we're also seeing is, outside of a segment of customers, and I haven't analyzed, you know, what spaces they are or anything, but outside of a segment of customers, most customers I've been talking to are still wait and see. They're interested, they're curious, but the cost in particular, even if there's any discounting for early adopters, the cost is terrifying. You know, it's basically doubling the cost of a Microsoft 365 E3 license. So it's really expensive. Right. And I think the common theme, even among people who have gone to it, we're still getting questions from them about, okay, so we got it. How can we tell if we're actually getting the ROI that Microsoft said we would get? And Jim and I've talked about this at length. There's not a good way to quantify that today. So it's going to be wait and see. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of customers who bought it are still trying to figure out, did I get my money's worth, or is it too early? So we'll have to sort of see how the next year goes.
I've been watching the Microsoft 365 roadmap that Microsoft does. And a lot of the things I think that people assume are there for these Copilots, especially the 365 one, aren't there yet. Like Excel is still in preview. It's late May now. They announced that this was done last year. And I just saw the roadmap. I think now they're saying GA for Copilot and Excel might be June or July this year. I don't think people know that.
No, I didn't. And I think that's a real issue, because you can't know if you're a customer licensing it, what you're actually getting in the box. You're getting Copilot for Microsoft 365, but which pieces are there, which pieces are mature, which pieces have guardrails. And the other thing that we did here is people are having to do really considerate user training, of which there's not anything out there. They're basically having to create it to tell people, listen, here's all the tools that are in the box. You might want to think about how they could help you get your job done each day. But then each employee has to think about those things. And it's ironic to have to sort of break time out of your schedule to figure out, how do I use a tool that's going to make me more efficient? And I have to change my workflow to make me more efficient.
Right, exactly. The other thing I heard from Build, from someone I know who was attending, he said that he was hearing a ton of interest in Purview. And he said it's all because of the Copilots, right? He said people buy them, then they suddenly realize, oh, wait, I can't just deploy this. Like, I don't have my compliance strategy in place. My data is all over the place. I don't want to expose things to people who shouldn't be seeing them. And so his theory is Microsoft must be seeing a huge uptick in Purview sales, because people who are already committing to Copilot have to go back and retrofit before they can actually deploy.
That wouldn't surprise me. In fact, you know, Barry wrote a great report talking about some of the changes that are going on in Purview to sort of, it seemed like trying to centralize it more like Microsoft 365 Defender. That's so last year, Microsoft Defender XDR, which is the 2024 name for the security centric portal. And I sort of get the vibe they're doing that kind of thing to harmonize it and make it easier to do all your to get everything in your purview. And it absolutely, it's kind of terrifying. You go down the road of Copilot first and realize you have a compliance problem, but I guess at least it's good. You're realizing you might have a compliance problem. So people are taking action. So
that's true.
Yeah. And you know, that actually wraps to the fifth point I wanted to make, which is there's a theme that I'm very clearly hearing as we're seeing customers pressured both by Microsoft and also just by the environment, by the breaches and attacks that Microsoft has faced in the last 2-3 years in particular, people looking at the stack of E5 security tools, all of the Microsoft Defender things, and again, Defender XDR as a portal. There's a lot of potential there, but also the tools, if you look at the roadmap, what I've been capturing in our roadmap that we do for them, they're kind of lagging. They haven't had a lot of innovation this year, and probably because the company's really centered on Copilot work. But I guess that's probably good, because the other thing that I'm unfortunately hearing is a lot of customers who say they've switched from Hero Solutions from some other vendor, or piecemeal pieces across different vendors, and tried to move towards harmonizing with Defender XDR or all the Defender products and services. Mm-hmm. And it's just overwhelming. You know, I heard from a customer who has gone, let's just say they licensed things and they went a long time and they've really only deployed pieces of it. And the thing I'm worried about is it becoming what we used to refer to at Microsoft as shelfware. And that's so dangerous to, you know, of course, it's dangerous to buy a security technology and never actually deploy it. But more importantly, it's so wasteful if you don't have the cycles to deploy the software in the next 1, 2, 3 years, then still there's really no sense in licensing it as a part of your EA renewal. So it's a catch-22 when I'm trying to tell customers there's a sense in unifying on all the Defender stuff, but there's so much work to get there. But it's, you know, everything, it's like Copilot, it takes time. So all of these things, there's just so much heavy lifting everybody has to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On that note, I'm going to take a quick break. And I want to tell you more about these infamous licensing boot camps that Wes is talking about. So we hold several virtual boot camps. This year, we're going to have several. There's going to be one in mid-July, one in late October, and another in mid-December. So if you can't make it to an in-person camp, you should definitely check out the virtual boot camps. But if you do want to do one of these in-person camps, there is one that's happening September 10th to 12th, right near the Microsoft Mothership in Bellevue, Washington. I went to the Atlanta boot camp, not this year, but the previous year. And I really have to say, I felt like the quantity and the quality of information was impressive. In fact, it was overwhelming. The opportunity to talk with all the directions analysts and the other customers who are there really make it a great event. If you need to make sure your knowledge about licensing is current and updated, this is the place to do that. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com. or email info@directionsonmicrosoft.com so you can learn more about the boot camps, the EA advisory, and other services that we offer. Okay, now it's my turn to do my five things about Microsoft Build. So I'm going to do a little bit of inside baseball. I don't know if people like that or dislike it, but I think it kind of sets the stage for what happened this year. So this was the first time that media was allowed back to a major Microsoft event since 2019, this year. Other big tech vendors have already been letting the press come back, but Microsoft did not until this year. So it was kind of like a big reunion for all of us in the press and the analysts who got to go to this. Yet, this was a very incremental Build conference. Usually Microsoft has hundreds of announcements when they do Build. There were 60, they said, this year. And most of them are very small, like an update, like something went from preview to GA, that kind of thing. Most everything that we heard was about AI and Copilots. No big surprise there. My question about this is that the kind of content that developers want? So Build always has been a show about .NET and Visual Studio Code and a lot of coding demos. So I'm curious if developers found all the AI and Copilot talk compelling. I think some probably did. But based on the applause that different things got during the day one keynote. It makes me wonder, because the thing that got the biggest applause was custom emojis and Teams, and I'm not even kidding.
Well, you know, I mean, I guess it's sort of the thing where you can relate to what you use day to day. I think they also kind of got it muddled with the Copilot Plus PC announcement the day before, which it was good because it gets it on your mind, but it also sort of blurred what was billed and what was the device announcement.
It totally did. The other thing they did that got like somewhat good applause was they had Sam Altman come out on stage during the day one keynote. It was a little awkward because all the stuff with ChatGPT and Scarlett Johansson was like right in the midst of exploding. So it was a little, it felt a little stiff and a little awkward, but he was there, you know, it was supposed to show partners together, working together, even though there are rumors swirling around that OpenAI may be talking to Apple about some kind of a deal, which I'm sure would not make Microsoft very happy. The other thing that happened during Build, and this is just a perpetual problem. It sounds like this happened in the boot camp too. There's a lot of branding confusion that really, it's not just a marketing thing, but it's actually getting in the way of being able to understand, buy, and deploy products at this point. So Microsoft got up on stage and said, there's one Microsoft Copilot. We know that is not true, right? There's not one. They call everything Copilot, just plain old Copilot now. Everything from Bing Chat to Bing Chat Enterprise to Microsoft 365 Copilot, even the sales and service Copilots are getting thrown in here. And we know there's not just one. Kevin Scott, who's the CTO, got up on stage and said, we have so many Copilots. I'm like, okay, there, that's good. There we go. There's some truth, right?
It's interesting to think about it, though, because the challenges we've seen in the large report that Andy has put together that, you know, we share, there's so many, and the models are different. The licensing is different. Mm-hmm. And it actually, you know, I get what they're sort of trying to say, which is they're trying to simplify the message. But at the end of the day, there's so much stuff going on that they're actually, it's almost like inconsiderate to the end IT pro who's trying to figure out what they're supposed to buy and what they're supposed to use.
Right.
Very. How am I supposed to keep it straight?
I know. The message they were trying to get across to developers was Microsoft is unifying its Copilot extensibility concepts, meaning like plugins and connectors. But even that's not really true, because GitHub Copilot extensions are nothing like the other Copilot extensions for all these different Copilots that we're referencing. So I don't know. I think you're right. They want it to be a simplified message, but they've already muddied the waters so much that I don't think they can make it that simple.
Yeah. In my head, it's interesting too, because I always, as the original big table, I look at GitHub Copilot as the first thing, and everything else sort of evolves around it. But it's also, I think, even though it has its own problems, which we could talk about those another time, it is a distinct solution, and it attempts to solve one thing based on their ecosystem. And some of the other Copilots, I feel like, A, they're still sort of grabbing at what I'm supposed to do, and for your point, they haven't all even shipped all the functionality that they originally announced.
Right. All right. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we call the day zero announcement at Build, which Wes referenced earlier. So the day before Build kicked off, Microsoft had a private event for press and media and analysts about Copilot Plus PCs. This is a new term for their AI PCs. I feel like they kind of added this event because they looked at the Build agenda and they're like, oh, the press going to come. There's not that much here, right? So they decided to announce their ARM-based, Windows on ARM-based PCs on day zero. They're going to start shipping very soon, like June 18th. All these PCs from all their top partners, Acer, Asus, HP, Lenovo, Samsung, and Microsoft itself, are going to be available for people to buy starting June 18th. Okay, I said content was coming in hot for Build. This is coming in extra hot because Windows 11 24H2, which is the operating system that's going to be inside these, it's not even RTM'd and available yet. So we're 2 weeks away from the PCs that are running this operating system shipping to people. Microsoft also announced like a Windows Copilot runtime layer that we had never heard about before. They showed a bunch of apps and application experiences that we had never seen before and aren't available for testers because you need to have these Copilot PCs to run them and they don't exist yet. So yeah, this is going to be very interesting starting June 18th when everything suddenly comes out and it's not really been tested outside Microsoft and people can put down their $1,000 plus and buy one of these ARM-based PCs.
You know, it's interesting if thinking about it in this context, again, I was telling the rest of the analyst team the other day that I was happy I was offline and this is going to give me a good context to get updated on what actually happened. But I think looking at it in this lens, prism joke aside, there's an interesting thing here, which is, okay, so if we think about the Copilot plus PCs announcement, not necessarily as something that targets, you know, IT pros or even consumers and really targets the developers who were there. In a way, it's kind of like the ARM systems that they've talked about at Build before, except this is sort of like you're going to get a preval of the operating system that'll be actually tightened up by the time, you know, winter rolls around. I don't know. It's interesting, but I've already seen again confusion around the Copilot Plus. Is there a space after the space before the Plus? Is space after
no
the
space? So
same thing. Struggling for coherent branding.
It's true. I also was a little. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised by this, but Microsoft spent a lot of time during this announcement showing off MacBook Air 3 versus Copilot PCs and did all these demos of them running all different kinds of apps and benchmarks and talked about battery life and constant video streaming and how, in every case, Surface PCs, which were Copilot PCs, won. And you and I have talked about this before, Wes. I know why Microsoft does this, but does anybody actually cross-shop Windows PCs and Macs? Like, do you go into a store and go, I don't know, should I get a Mac or should I get a PC? I don't think people do that.
I don't think so. And the only people who I think do that, so I've even made my little Simpsons gif that I throw around periodically mm-hmm. about don't make me tap the sign. And I think that the only people who do are people who were in the audience at Build. So your developers. Mm-hmm. And it's the thing is, they're people who are prone to, again, because it's a Microsoft show, not use a Mac as a Mac. So they're cross-shopping a broken PC with Microsoft endorsed PCs. And this goes back to the point I've been making for 3+ years as Apple's begun this push to ARM with the Apple Silicon, that if you're a Windows developer, using a Mac as your platform is doing you a huge disservice. There's just a bunch of things that aren't there that won't work right. So if nothing else, the move with the mature, hopefully more mature than we've had in the past, Qualcomm processors in these, it may actually give people a PC to develop on with Windows that A, they're running it natively, and sure, they can spin out some VMs too. But more importantly, they're going to have all of the pieces there for Windows 11 to run, which is not true with a Mac. And I think it's probably good because if anything, this actually introduces the definite nail in the idea that don't cross shop. If you want a Mac, buy a Mac. If you want a Windows PC and you want it to be ARM, then go this route instead, not a Mac.
Right. As I mentioned in an article I wrote about this, you know, Microsoft's been trying to make Windows on ARM a thing for over a decade, starting with Surface RT and Windows RT. It's never worked. They say they've fixed it now, right? So they've got the Snapdragon X processor in there, which is built for PCs and not built for phones. So that's good. They've got a souped up emulation layer called Prism. They're calling it PRISM that they say will be able to emulate apps that are not natively ported to ARM better. So we'll see, you know, maybe, and they've also got more apps natively ported to ARM now, including things like Chrome and some of the key Adobe apps. So maybe it's going to work this time. We'll see. If they can come up with a Windows PC that actually has excellent battery life, lower power requirements, and runs cooler, I will be happy to buy it. Forget the AI selling stuff on top, but I would just buy that. So we'll see.
Yeah. Just one thing that's always coming up when I think about this is I think about my uncle last year asked me a question about Apple and running Windows on an ARM on our Mac. And I think that the thing was trying to explain to him, well, if it's a really, really old Windows app, don't get a Mac because it's not going to run. You know, 16-bit. Right. There's a bunch of edge cases. And those are the things that will burn non-technical users. So we'll see how the next year goes. But I think this is the classic Microsoft third time's the charm. So we'll see how it goes.
Yep. I'm counting on that because I need a new PC. So I'm counting on that. okay. Back to build. So day one, day two, they did have some announcements that are worth pointing out. Azure AI Studio, which is a development platform for copilots and related apps, is now GA finally. And it includes OpenAI's GPT-4o and Microsoft's new Phi-3 Vision, which is a multimodal small language model that lets you do things like put input images and text and receive text responses. So that's kind of cool. They also did roll out a preview of the promised Cobalt 100 ARM-based VM based on Microsoft's own custom ARM silicon. That's also in public preview. But then we get a lot of Copilot promises too, more Copilot promises on top of the things already promised. The one that I was the most intrigued by, but it's in very, very early access program, which means very few people have the capability to test this right now, is something called Copilot Agents and Copilot Studio. So Copilot Studio is the low-code version of the development platform. It's what used to be called Power Virtual Agents. And what Copilot Agents will let you do is independently orchestrate tasks designed for specific roles and functions. So you could say, instead of letting Copilot sit there and wait for you to query it, it would be able to do things automatically, like monitor an email inbox or automate a series of tasks or data entry that people normally do manually. So it's kind of like, instead of having to prompt Copilot to make it do something, it'll do it proactively on your behalf. If this can work, that's very interesting, right? There's limited use cases, but I'm intrigued about that because I feel like having a prompt Copilot all the time does limit what you can do with it.
Absolutely.
Right? And then they also talked about Copilot connectors in Copilot Studio. Let's mention Copilot one more time in a name. That's also in preview, and that's going to let you bring together your Graph and your Power Platform connectors and Dataverse so that you can ground your Copilots in first and third party line of business data. So I'm intrigued by them finally bringing line of business data into this whole model and not just have it be about Word, Excel, PowerPoint, et cetera. Then, just because we need one more confusing name, they did announce something called Team Copilot, singular, not plural. So it's not Copilot for Teams, it's Team Copilot. And instead of having Copilot act as a single assistant for a single person, this acts on behalf of your team. So you can have Team Copilot in Teams. You can have Team Copilot in Loop and Planner and a bunch of other apps. So this will do things for you like take your meeting notes, facilitate meetings, manage your agenda, you know, surface info that it's in your chats, assign and track tasks, all these things that you would use a physical human being assistant to do if you had a meeting going on. This, again, does not exist yet. Preview coming later this year for those who have Copilot for Microsoft 365. So, yeah, those are my top highlights from Build. There's a lot of intriguing things. I think Ignite is going to be where we see more Copilot-related news, not just about Microsoft 365 Copilot, but like Security Copilot and who knows how many other Copilots they will announce between now and then.
Yeah, I think the other thing is just remembering that Ignite is so much about shipping product, and we've got the new versions of Windows and Office and everything right around the corner. So there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out the door at the same time or right after.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's going to be end of 2024 and into 2025. Lots of things going out of support and new products coming in. It's going to be a very busy time for all of us. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Wes. As always, I appreciate your insights.
Thanks for having me.
To close, I want to remind our listeners they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics you would like to hear the Directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via Twitter at Mary Jo Foley. And speaking of Twitter, or as X, as we have to call it now, give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT for all the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thank you again.